Welcome to Short Course, episode 127 for March 26th, 2024. I'm your host, Ben Barry. I am recording this on a Tuesday, and I'll be releasing it as soon as it's ready. And that is because last night was the March board meeting on the regularly scheduled fourth Monday and was not live streamed. And that plus a number of comments being made on Facebook by Area 4 Director Ken Cobb have created quite a lot of discussion that I think is useful to address as best I can. So first off, it is public information that last night's meeting was not live streamed. We made sure that a statement was posted on the live stream page once the vote to waive 10.2 failed so that folks wouldn't be hanging around waiting for it to start when it was not coming. Now, that said, the rules around 10.2 specify that a 3/4 majority is required to waive 10.2. So right now we have 7 voting members of the board, which means 2 no votes is enough to sink it. Now, notably, once we have an 8th member of the board, a 6 votes will still be a 3/4 majority, and 2 no votes will not be enough to sink a 3/4 vote. But as we only had 7 votes on this meeting, a 10.2 vote required only 2 votes to fail. Let me put it that way. So there's a lot of people that are specifically blaming this on Ken Cobb, the incoming Area 4 director, and obviously mathematically by himself, he could not vote against this and sink a 10.2 vote. And it's worth noting that the previous votes to waive 10.2 were all unanimous. So it takes more than just Ken for what happened last night. And I'll leave it at that for now. One of the comments that Ken has made on Facebook that I've seen screenshots of and that is getting a lot of attention from the membership is the fact that last night's meeting went for almost 6 hours, which is true. We started at 7 p.m. Eastern and went until 12:45 in the morning, which made work today really quite enjoyable. But also, he said that in those 6 hours, we did not manage to get to a number of important agenda items, including addressing the Area 3 director's situation, which is also true. I will say, as if you look at the agenda that was posted, and again, this is public information, the agenda for the meeting was posted, the intent of that agenda, as drafted by Yimen, and I'm not defending this, I'm just explaining it, the intent of that agenda was to leave the items that were to be discussed in executive session to the end, with the goal of moving through everything else, being able to dismiss all the other directors who'd made their reports, and then just the members of the executive session would be left to discuss those items. That does end up having the side effect of looking like we are leaving the most important, significant items, the ones that do need to be discussed in executive session, to the end. And I recognize that choice to structure the agenda that way had the effect of putting those items to the end when even best case it would be late at night and we would have been sitting through multiple hours of board meetings about relatively less significant topics. No question there. That said, I think it is worth noting as we neared almost the 6 hour mark of the meeting and it was clear that we had a number of topics to discuss, we did arrange to reconvene at the next date that all the board members were available because each of us are all very interested in the outcome of these various executive session topics. As it happens, that will be next Monday, April 1st. So there will be a call put out to the board. It's not required to be posted publicly, actually, but the plan is that there will be a special meeting called with the remaining agenda items as the only topics for the meeting so that we can get through those. And again, this is not ideal. Nobody, I don't think any of us looking at the agenda thought we would necessarily blitz through it, but the idea that it would take 6 hours and we would not even get to most of the items of substance at the end was definitely a surprise. Additionally, the topic has come up of the initiative that I have admittedly talked about on this podcast and mentioned about moving to a system where we approve the minutes at the subsequent meeting with the goal of having the ability to have an open discussion in the subsequent meeting if there's a disagreement about what should go in the minutes. And again, this came out of the fact that there were a number of motions made in calendar year 2023 that for various reasons were not included in the minutes. And there was no discussion of that and no opportunity in an open session to at least call a vote to amend the minutes in a certain way and have that motion at least be recorded in the subsequent minutes. Again, I know this all seems trivial, but there are things that we did not see in the minutes because this procedure was not followed. Now, that said, I've acknowledged that this process means that you either have to have watched the live stream, find a third party recording of the live stream to watch, or wait a month for the minutes to come out. That was not my goal. That was not a desired outcome. I've been pushing for a system where we release some kind of draft minutes, so there is at least a record of the votes, if not necessarily the exact motions and all the various procedural maneuverings that happened during the meeting. There is at least a record of the votes so people know what binding action has and hasn't been taken by the board. Now, that has not happened, but the plan is to, since this meeting was not live streamed, to fall back to the previous system and have the minutes posted by the end of the week, by this Friday. So we will have the minutes for the March 25th meeting by this Friday, and then next Monday we will have the special meeting to pick up and resolve a number of agenda items, including a review of the legal opinion that we got from the Delaware law firm and the status of the Area 3 director seat. Now, I would like to address some of the conversation around what's been going on. And a lot of people have been asking me in recent weeks, what do I think? Are things getting better? Should the protests continue? Should match directors that are running hit factor matches or running USPSA matches but withholding their fees, should they continue? And my answer has been, I do think things are genuinely trending in the right direction. Not quickly, but they are trending in the right direction. But that it is ultimately up to each match director to choose whether they are willing to continue to fund an organization that has not sufficiently proven to the match director's standard that things are going in the right direction. And all I can say is that I still believe that's true. Is the lack of live streaming of the March board meeting a setback? Yes. Have there been other setbacks before? Yes. Progress is not always linear. Sometimes it's two steps forward and one step back. I do think on net, we are in a better position as an organization today than we were 6 months ago. Does that mean I think I'm a better board member than Scott Arnberg? No, of course not. But I do think on net, if you look at the composition of the board 6 months ago, or even the composition of the board in November or December, and you compare that to the composition of the board now, I do think on net, things are better. So this is a setback, but I do not think it's a fatal one. I do not think it's a catastrophic one. I do think this is something that has to be dealt with. The concerns that were raised around live streaming have to be resolved, but I think they can be resolved, and I think they will be. But in this whole strange project of trying to get involved and reform an organization from the inside, the idea that it was going to reach a tipping point and from that point on just be one positive step forward with no setbacks whatsoever until everything was absolutely resolved, that was never going to happen. It was always going to be forward progress, backward progress. But on net, I do still think there's more forward than back. One other topic that has come up today is around area directors and the area director travel budget. And there was, for example, a motion on the table from Scott Arnberg last year to remove the whole area director travel budget outside of paying for, I believe it was one trip to nationals, but that the $6,000 allowance, which is in fact $6,000. If you go to the USPSA policies page, you can find the expense policy there. It's not $10,000 like I've seen quoted elsewhere. It was $5,000 at one point. It was increased to six. And the policy states it is for additional travel up to $6,000 a year will be covered for the area directors so that they can perform any other duties defined in the bylaws. And in some places, this is being characterized as basically a way to fund match travel for area directors. And maybe some area directors use it that way. What I can say is I did consider not using these funds and just going to the same handful of matches that I typically go to, which in the last few years has been North Carolina, South Carolina, and Area 6. And I made the decision that I would, as an experiment, try and travel to as many section matches within Area 6 as I could. Not any nationals, but just section matches within Area 6 to get a chance to meet the staff and meet the shooters and interact with them face-to-face for the purpose of actually being able to be in a position to talk and hear their concerns and try and understand what we could be doing better. So, for example, this past weekend, I was down at the South Carolina section match, but where previously I would just pay my match fee, and I did pay my match fee out of my pocket for that match this year, but where previously I would just come in, shoot the match, and go home, this year, actually, Stephanie and I, we left our kids with her parents, with their grandparents, and we spent the weekend from the second half of setup day Thursday until the end of the day Sunday on the range, scoping out the facilities, because this will be where we're hosting Area 6, trying to get a sense of what we need to watch out for, what we need to plan for, basically, you know, as a essentially a site visit, a scouting visit. And then on the staff day, as well as the Saturday when most of the competitors were shooting, I just walked around and talked to as many folks as I could. I just tried to have conversations, hear people's concerns, and just generally be aware of what is going on. I know it has been common in the past for area directors to work matches, and if all I wanted to do was to have a sort of passing interaction where I maximized the number of people who saw me working the match would be a good way to do that, because basically every shooter sees you but doesn't necessarily have a chance to have more than a 5 or 10 second conversation with you in between shooters as you're running their squad through and then they move on. And I explicitly chose not to do that in this scenario. I wanted to be present to be able to interact and actually take 5 or 10 minutes to talk to someone if they had something they wanted to address. And I think that was successful. It was definitely exhausting, but that was accomplished, and I'm appreciative of it. So that's my goal in traveling to section matches. Yes, I could sign up to work them and just take the staff package, but my goal is to be present in a way that I can interact with the staff and the shooters and actually have these conversations. So to that end, for example, I have booked travel to fly to the Alabama section, get the cheapest rental car I can, take a cheap flight, stay in a cheap hotel as economically as I can, travel to that match. With my work schedule, taking an additional 2 days of PTO to drive is not really realistic. And so flying there, expensing that to USPSA, I decided was, when I was making these plans back in January, a reasonable use of this allowance. I don't expect that I'll get close to the actual $6,000 limit. Certainly this Alabama trip alone won't do it. I'm still looking at a few more trips. The other ones that are on the bubble right now are Tennessee and Georgia. I'd like to be able to make it to both of those section matches as well, with the plan to shoot with the staff in this arrangement, shoot on staff day, and then be available during the days of the main match to walk around and interact with competitors and staff as available. So that's my plan. But this idea that the that I am using this to travel to exotic matches that I would not otherwise shoot. I mean, I look forward to shooting the Alabama match. I hope Tennessee and Georgia work out. I'm sure they will be high quality matches, but it's not like I'm flying to exotic locations like this. Curacao just announced they're having an IPSC match at a range they're building. I'm not traveling in that way on the company dime. In fact, I'm not going to that match at all, as much as I might like to. I will also say this is a good chance to plug the Area 6 website that we've set up. So it is area6uspsa.org, all spelled out like that. And on that page, or you can just go to area6uspsa.org/financials, and you will see everything, every financial record that we have to post. So all the budgets, all the P&Ls from the previous Area 6 matches that we were given. They're obviously marked as the year that they come from, so I'm not responsible for those, but we had copies of them, and I thought publishing them was the responsible thing to do. But there is also a section on there that is a spreadsheet of the expenses that I have either booked or plan to expense, and you can see how much I'm spending on what, and you can see exactly how much I'm charging. If you think it's too much, then we can talk about it. But everything that I'm doing, all the money that I am charging to USPSA will be up there on that spreadsheet, and you guys can see exactly what it's going towards and decide if it's a good use of your money or not. Because at the end of the day, every dollar that I spend from USPSA is a dollar that members paid in. It's not my money. It's not a target. It's not like $6,000 is the goal to hit each year, like it's a budget to be spent. No. I'll spend as little as I can going to these matches in the service of this goal of trying to be present outside the physical radius of my home that I would normally travel in. And obviously, I think it goes without saying, each of these trips actually means time away from family. I mean, most of these matches, it'll be, you know, checking a gun, flying on an airplane, staying in a hotel, driving in a rental car. I'm doing it because I want to get in contact with folks and be the best representative of the membership that I can be. But in a lot of cases, many of these matches where I have to get on an airplane, I probably would rather just stay home and spend the weekend with my family or go to the range or shoot a local match or dry fire. But that does not accomplish, in my estimation, the goal of being the best representative of the membership that I can. And so for now, this is for 2024, this is what I thought was the best way to go, and we'll see how it works out. Certainly, if that motion by Scott to remove all area director travel stipend had passed, I wouldn't do this. I would travel to the matches I could drive to, or the ones I'm working, which is North Carolina and Area 6. I'd probably drive to South Carolina. I might drive to Georgia, but it would be a much smaller circle. That's not better or worse, but under the circumstances that I found myself in when I was trying to plan out my year, I thought this was a good opportunity to try and get around the area and maximize the number of people that I could interact with by going to section matches where they would be maximally congregated. One other concern that was raised that I thought was worth addressing is something else that came out of this meeting, is that one of the nominations, so Frank Rizzi, Area 7, and I, Frank is the chair, I am the vice chair of the bylaws committee, and Frank put out the call via the official USPSA announcements page for people to submit a resume if they were interested in serving on the bylaws committee. And we got a pretty good turnout of members, and from those we chose a number of names to submit, and one of those names was Virginia Jo Dunlap. And as Frank disclosed to her in following the confidentiality rules in play, he disclosed to her that her appointment was not approved, that it was not voted on by the board. And there was some argument made that Frank and I, as the leadership of that committee, had failed in our duty. And the bylaws are pretty clear about this. The president is the one who makes nominations, but all committee nominations are subject to a majority vote of the board. So Frank and I made our recommendations to Yimin. Yimin presented the nominations as president. We voted on the candidates, and that vote did not succeed. So we did what we could, but we followed the bylaws. The nomination was not approved. There's really nothing else we could have done. Now, all that said, I do think, despite all of the discussion that has been going on in the past few days, I do think it is worth recognizing the folks that have stepped up and put skin in the game in the various areas around the country to try and assist with this change. So folks like Andy Erickson and Luke Faust, who put their names in to run for Area 3, Chris St. Clair, who's put his name in to run in Area 5, and as was just announced a little bit before I hit record tonight, we now have Mr. Competition Shooting Analytics himself, Kurt McKenna, has announced that he will be running for Area 2 as well. I don't know who else is running in Area 2 this year, but I do appreciate the fact that there are people who are willing to at least try and change the system from the inside. I don't begrudge anyone trying to approach this problem and fix it from the outside, whether that's by shooting outlaw matches or PCSL matches or the Hit Factor variant rulebook by Todd Woitzel. I don't begrudge any of that. And as I've said before, I think the more competition USPSA has from the outside, the more change from the inside making that case becomes necessary. And so I don't begrudge any of that. I just personally, when I chose to run in the fall of 2022, I saw that I was in a position to better make a difference from the inside than the outside. So that's the role that I'm playing. But if you listening to this find yourself in a different position and you want to change things in another way, by all means, I'm not saying not to do that. But I do appreciate the folks who are stepping up and not just posting on the internet about this, but are actually putting some skin in the game and stepping up and willing to actually join the board and go through the process of all the interviews and all the rigmarole of being a candidate and actually run for office. And I'll just close with this, which is a reflection on the nature of social media, which is that one of the reasons that we are where we are in the USPSA community right now is undoubtedly through social media and the information that it has allowed to be shared. But I think it is worth evaluating when you're looking at a given post on social media, whether it actually is providing you with information you didn't have before, or if it's simply stoking emotions that you already felt and enjoy having validated. So you can have a social media post that tells you something you didn't know, and maybe it confirms something you suspected, or maybe it disconfirms it. Or you can have a post that just makes you go, ha, I knew it. And you feel good in that moment. It doesn't necessarily inform you. It doesn't tell you anything. And what's tricky is a lot of these memes, they're funny, right? They're funny because they rely on this idea that you already had inside yourself. And so, you know, like any good comedy, it makes you laugh because it holds up a mirror to yourself. It makes you realize you thought something and you didn't know that you thought it until the comedian says it, or, you know, the comic portrays it. And that's, you know, that's the nature of good humor. But when you're looking at social media, ask yourself if what you're reading is actually informing you, is actually providing you with information you didn't have before, or if it's just prompting you to spiral deeper into a certain way of thinking, if it's prompting you to say that things are not going to get better and you should just give up. And hey, if you're fed up with the whole thing, if you want to tune out all the drama, by all means. If you don't want to renew your membership, by all means. I won't say you're a bad person for doing that. Certainly this whole thing is tiring. As much as anyone, I was hoping that things would get better and the protests could start to wind down. I don't see that happening now, but I was hopeful that it would. But just be aware and notice the track record of who's posting what you're reading. I mean, it was only a few weeks ago that people were making memes about me as the savior of USPSA, and now it's some of the same folks posting about how everything is doomed and we should just give up. And neither is true. I'm not the savior of anything. I'm not even special as a person. I just happen to be a guy who's in the right place at the right time, trying to do my best. But there's so much more that I could be doing. There's so many things that I don't know, and I'm honest about that. So all I say is neither of those things was true. The truth is somewhere in the middle. Things are never as good or as bad as they seem on social media. But hopefully, again, I don't know how many other ways to say it. Hopefully you will give us a little more time. Give us a little more credence. Keep your eyes posted. I'm not saying to just shut down and ignore everything you're seeing. Keep your eyes posted, but be aware when you're only seeing a part of what's going on. Hopefully the minutes from this last meeting and the previous meetings will all be up by the end of this week, and that'll provide a little more clarity on what's actually happening, and perhaps more importantly, the ability for those of us on the board who are in these meetings to speak openly about what happened. Well, that wraps up this episode of Short Course. If you want to get in touch with me, my email is ben@berryshooting.com. Talk to you next time.